Wake up!
Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Cowboys owner Jerry Jones firing Mike McCarthy, and you heard that reaction. He was not pleased. He was miffed.
He was miffed.
You think he's an idiot?
You think I'm an idiot?
No, I don't think he's an idiot, but I do think it was a fair question given his...
Do you think he's an idiot?
You have got to be smoking something over there this morning.
So,
what would be the equivalent?
The equivalent would be, let's say...
If Tom came on?
If Tom Ricketts were on the phone with us and he got tired of us asking him to have the Cubs behave like a big market team in Chicago.
Let's just enjoy the process again and let's get back on top.
But he could be a little more snarky than he typically has been. He could get a little, he gets a little impatient at times.
Well, I'm not sure I was booed. Believe me, you won't be booing about that in a year.
Dustin, let's cancel Tom.
I don't think anybody's tearing anything down.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
I'll get somebody else to ask these questions, man. I'm not kidding you.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Jerry threatening to fire people, so we were threatening to cancel an imaginary interview with Tom so we wouldn't get fired.
Good morning, Mully. Yes, happy Wednesday. I'd love to do that interview with Tom Ricketts to get to the point where maybe he would get upset with us. I don't know.
He would not do that.
We'd keep it professional. I'd like to talk to Tom Ricketts, though.
I would.
Watching all this baseball really makes me envious for October baseball in Chicago again. I'm tired of getting all these notifications on X, and I get these reminders and these memories come back of what the front page of the Chicago Tribune sports section looked like in 2017 and 2016. And I love reminiscing, but it makes you realize how long it's been since there's been relevant baseball in October.
I got a text from a friend of mine yesterday. He said, you guys are talking about Lonzo Ball playing and how it's must-watch TV. Some of us don't have it. He was so mad at me. And I was like, dude, you know, break down, go to a tavern, get your antenna. What can I tell you?
Chicago Sports Network still negotiating with a lot of the major carriers in the area. So,
well, there's one.
Hopefully that will come. Yeah, the Comcast Xfinity. That's the missing piece. There are a lot of other options, as you point out, that you can watch it.
You see it in the pub.
Get an antenna. It's free over the air. And hopefully in time, this will pass, and it will be available to more people. A lot of upset, understandably upset Hawks fans, Bulls fans, sports fans in Chicago out there. Danny Wirtz being among them, CEO of the Blackhawks, talked to the Sun-Times this morning. That's on the back page. Interesting story by Ben Pope. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff to watch tonight with Lonzo Ball back for the Bulls. The baseball, though, last night, we heard that coming in during the pregame show.
Yeah.
Aaron Judge got all of that one.
Yeah, Aaron Judge, he had gone 9 games without a home run, which sounds like...
It's an eternity.
For him, it's an eternity.
Yeah, 9 games.
For most humans, it's like many people have gone hundreds of games without a home run. But for Aaron Judge, you've got a, here comes the judge and the whole bit.
Well, especially in New York. Those weren't a quiet 9 games.
No.
Those weren't very – he heard about it after every at-bat.
Yeah.
The pressure mounted, and then he comes in, and they had a 4-2 lead. He made it 6-2 with one swing of the bat.
Yes.
He looked like he was so relieved. You wonder if that will make him a little bit more relaxed, and we'll see the Aaron Judge we're used to seeing now. That series, I think, is going to be 5 games.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
It doesn't look like a good one, and they have taken care of business, and – It seems inevitable that the Yankees will be.
Your Mets might be in good shape, but I think the Guardians
The Mets at least are making a series of it, right? They've tied the series in L.A. And
they've got the Dodgers contemplating moving Ohtani down in the order because of his ability to drive in runs with runners in scoring position.
Mm-hmm.
They've got them questioning things. They've got them feeling shakier than they did when they were going 33 innings without giving up a run. Now they lose a game in L.A. Things go back to Citi Field. You never know.
You know, here's the thing. Like the Guardians, They have money, but they don't spend money the same way that everyone else left. So last year you saw teams that weren't expected to be in the World Series. If it winds up either the Mets or the Dodgers, either the highest spending team or the top three spending team versus the second spending team, I think that everybody's going to conclude that if you want to win, you're going to have to spend money. Although
fair conclusion,
that wasn't the lesson of a year ago.
No, it was not. And the Cleveland Guardians are 26th in payroll.
Yeah,
$43 million. That's
pretty cheap.
$43 million for the 2025 payroll, projected payroll, and the Cubs are
it's about what Javi Baez makes. And I'm joking.
Well, just about.
He's owed $73 million.
If that is the takeaway from the baseball Final Four, that you spend your way to a championship and that's the way you win in Major League Baseball, then I think the next conversation with Tom Ricketts will include that part of the conversation.
Are you willing to spend your way to a title?
And I think that he would make the argument and have the facts at his disposal that the Cubs – spending really hasn't been the issue.
I
don't think it has.
Right. And they should be better based on the amount of money they've spent vis-a-vis the division.
Mm-hmm. They really should. And now it's a matter of, you know, Juan Soto's batting last night, and I'm watching it, and I'm really wondering, given where he is in that lineup, given how comfortable he looks at the plate, why would he ever leave the New York Yankees?
Well, we know what the answer is, right?
They have all the money. They have as much money as anybody.
So you're saying, why wouldn't they pay him what it costs to keep him?
Yes, they're likely going to pay him.
Yeah.
And then they're likely going to keep him. And so I don't know if I want to get way out in front of I don't want to get carried away thinking the Cubs should be in on Juan Soto, because I'm not sure that it will matter. You know what I mean?
I do know.
Seems inevitable that he's going to stay in New York. Last year with Ohtani, it was likely, almost a certainty, that he was going to leave the Angels because he was looking for a different scenario, a better situation for himself, playoff potential. He wanted to fly privately to Toronto.
How much fun was that when that was all going on?
It depends on who you were.
Well, I mean, it was just hilarious.
Look, we're not going to be in an Ohtani race. I'll tell you that right now.
But don't you feel like a month away from free agency, it's a different scenario with Juan Soto and thought process than it would have been, than it was with Ohtani?
Yes. I think part of that is that Juan Soto has been to multiple teams, right?
He's
been around the league a little bit, been a few places.
Washington, San Diego, New York.
Yes. And you feel like he's reached a place that will pay through the nose for him and keep him, and they should, frankly. So we'll see how that plays out, but I think you're right. I'm still disappointed that he's not even mentioned with the Cubs. I mean, why wouldn't you want a guy he's going to be 26 when next year begins? That's a guy entering his prime. Who wouldn't want a guy's prime?
Everybody would want him in his prime.
No question.
I would think that would be a no-brainer.
Yes.
That if you think that's the cost of playing poker, you know, that's that's just one of those givens. If you are a big market team, you're going to explore the feasibility of signing Juan Soto or pursuing him. Anthony Rizzo had a good game last night too.
Anthony
speaking
Rizzo
of the Cubs,
good. Yeah.
He comes back. He's got two broken fingers, or he's recovering from two broken fingers in his right hand. And he had two really quality at-bats, and he got picked off. And he looked really slow. But he did drive a double down the right field line. And that Yankees did not run the bases very intelligently last night, but they did win.
Right.
So that series seems to be in their command.
Yeah, they look like they were in great shape. I mean, we'll see. I don't expect the Guardians to come roaring back, but they do have pitching, and whenever, you know, where there is life, there is hope, and there is life, so you can't call them hopeless, but certainly the other series looks a lot closer, being tied, and with the Mets playing the way they've been playing, there is that touch of magic to whatever they're doing. But I got to tell you, I think that you know, the Mets are the kind of team, with Steve Cohen spending the kind of money they're spending, who knows?
It's funny, they're spending all kinds of money, and then they're kind of known as the try-hard Mets and like the Cinderella story. And they really aren't
ridiculous.
That because they have highly paid stars and an owner that's hell-bent on getting and spending as much as necessary to be in this position.
He's as much fan as owner. In other words, he's not owning the team like an owner. He's owning the team like a fan.
It's like his fantasy baseball team.
Yes, and he's showing up and taking photos with people and all that stuff.
He's enjoying the ride.
Wouldn't he want to go after Juan Soto? Wouldn't he, if you could steal him from the crosstown rivals?
It'd be a great coup.
Yeah,
it would be a coup. I'm not questioning anybody's interest level in one of the best young players in the game. If I'm Juan Soto and I'm looking at, you know, in front of me, who's batting after me? Oh, that's Aaron Judge. Who's batting after him? Oh, that's Giancarlo Stanton. Am I going to see better pitches in any other lineup in baseball? No.
It does tell you, though, that like it is the old Armor Hot Dog song when you think about great baseball players, because Juan Soto is a power guy, but he's a shorter, wider kind of – he's not the giant
that
the two guys you described around him in the lineup.
It's good. It's a good way to compliment those giants.
Oh, my gosh.
Is with Juan Soto, 3-4-5. Boy, that doesn't get much better than that. Maybe
scary
the Dodgers at times, but that's why that's the World Series I hope happens, the Dodgers and the Yankees. Major League Baseball, you see the promos for the World Series. They're already promoting it. It's Judge and Ohtani.
Yes.
They're the stars of that commercial. They're the stars of this show in this month. And I think they're on a collision course for the World Series. That will be a lot of fun. But the Mets may have other ideas.
Would that be a reason that Soto would want to leave? Just the idea that he wants to be his own entity?
Could be.
His own team? I don't know.
I don't know enough about him to suggest that. But it's possible. We have seen
plenty of
players on similar ego trips before.
Yeah. Well, and it's not fair to call it an ego trip. Just kind of you want to be acknowledged for who you are and what you do. And
maybe, fair enough.
Maybe it is an ego
trip. Maybe a little bit. Speaking of ego trips, busy day in the NFL.
Oh, my God. I'm still trying to figure out what Woody Johnson meant when he said that it was all about him. What are you talking about? The Jets, speaking of New York, are all in. Only they did fire their coach, and I don't think that's ever worked. So are they all in? Like, they got Davante Adams. Okay, way to go. And he made it clear, this has nothing to do with Aaron Rodgers. It was his decision. Aaron Rodgers didn't want Davante Adams.
No, that's why Davante Adams hijacked the podcast.
Yeah, he showed up.
Appearance on the Pat McAfee show, and all of a sudden there's Davante Adams with a cameo, a surprise appearance. Aaron Rodgers had nothing to do with that.
No. He was as stunned as anyone.
If just sharing his treatment facility with the guy coming back from a hamstring injury.
Yeah.
Is he okay now?
No, he's going to be
all right.
There's
no limp. He did not limp into the Jets facility, did he?
We'll see if he gets through it somehow.
Yeah, it's kind of inconceivable to think that Aaron Rodgers' fingerprints aren't all over this series of moves by the Jets. Desperate moves. And this is a team, I think, closer to unraveling than challenging.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment. I think that, you know, if Devontae comes with the time machine and they can push it back to vintage Green Bay Rodgers to Davante Adams.
Can they bring Matt LaFleur to call plays too?
Well, I don't know.
And maybe
welcome.
Is David Bakhtiari on the way to protect the blind side of an Aaron Rodgers?
But he would also need the time
machine. Yeah, he would need the time machine as well. It's a great idea.
Yeah,
and from 2014 to 2021, boy, there wasn't a better tandem in the NFL.
No question.
But the calendar says it's 2024.
It's a desperate move.
Yeah, it's a desperate move.
It's desperation because you've already fired the coach. You know, you're barely into the season, and really, that's not the move you make if you're on your way to the Super Bowl. I saw someone on television. I think it was Jeff Saturday. Was doing some NFL show yesterday.
Ex-head coach Jeff Saturday.
And that's what I thought of. I thought, what, didn't they try to hire Jeff Saturday?
They did.
To turn that thing around.
Yeah.
I don't know that kind of thing works. Now, he wasn't an NFL coach, but neither was this guy. I don't even remember.
In-season head coaching moves in the NFL rarely turn out well.
I don't.
Because it's not the same as other sports. Yeah. The season isn't long enough. It's a different dynamic. There's different systems in place.
Yes.
You have, and maybe that's the flaw in the system, and you can criticize that it's too regimented and there's too complex and all those things. You might be right. You might have an argument there. But the fact of the matter is teams don't just change systems in season. You can't bring somebody else in from the outside or even like somebody on the staff.
It's a splash move. I mean, wow, look at that. See what they did?
Yeah.
But does that work? Does it work, generally speaking, to fire the coach, bring in another player, kind of let the quarterback take control of the franchise?
Well, they did that already, I think.
They already tried
that. That was the tug of war, and the quarterback taking hold of the franchise happened the minute that you signed him or traded for him. I think with Robert Saleh, the one exception, generally speaking, is if you feel like the head coach is having a negative impact and the dysfunction is because of his demeanor or the power of his personality and he's got to go, you remove him from the equation, okay, maybe that's a justification for making a move like that. Otherwise, got to live with it. You got to write it out.
Yeah.
And they, I think, made themselves worse more than better in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I just don't know how I don't know if that works. I don't know that it has worked. I don't know why the guy that was on the staff sitting there, who's now the caretaker, is going to help you to be better than the guy that was there that you kind of gave your team to and he was in charge of it.
Devontae Adams maybe will run the right route, unlike Mike Williams, who was thrown under the bus by number 8.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're not running the right route, and that weak armed throw at the end of the game, the interception, according to Rodgers, not my fault. He did not run the right route. Well, he run the right route, I threw to that spot and he wasn't there.
No, that's not what happened. The receiver did slip, but because he slipped, he had a better chance of catching the ball because it was underthrown.
It looked badly underthrown.
Yes, and the nickel came over the top. And managed to catch that ball.
But that's not
ball.
The way that Rodgers described
it.
No,
it's not.
Rodgers described it as if it was Mike Williams running the wrong route, and all of a sudden, oh, boy, that's because of that the interception happened and the game was over. So.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the circus, to be honest with you, because there are so many kind of media Jets people that are so up and down and crazy.
I'm so invested in the Jets. It's kind of ridiculous.
It's a bit much.
The Jets and the Cowboys, the two most overcovered teams in the NFL, and both are receiving a lot of attention for their dysfunction more than anything this week.
Yeah, it's true.
The Jerry Jones thing coming in is hilarious, but it's just on brand because of him going off the rails and threatening two guys asking fair questions and making more news for being loud.
Yeah,
just for being loud.
Well,
the Cowboys are loud. They're loud bad.
He's become even more of a caricature of himself than he was. He is this kind of exaggerated version of Jerry because he can't win. Because he's also the general manager. The reason any question is fair game is because he's on as the architect of the team. He's not on. As simply the owner. He's not a guy with money behind the program. He's the guy that's making all these day-to-day decisions that have all kind of blown up on him. And I mean, I don't agree with the crowd that says the Cowboys are they have no future, they're done. I think that they have the quarterback there long-term. They got CeeDee Lamb there long-term. Micah Parsons presumably will be the next guy paid. But that creates a host of issues and problems, and you got to wonder if they have the right guy there picking the players to make those decisions, right?
You'd like to see somebody in that organization provide a dose of stability.
Yes.
Or offer kind of some confidence that there are going to be decisions made that aren't impulsive, that aren't kind of rooted in emotion. And when you hear Jerry Jones go off the rails like that, you are reminded that he's involved in football decisions. And the reason this might be going in the wrong direction could be he's making a lot of decisions that aren't good decisions because he can't really get out of his own way sometimes.
You think I'm an idiot?
No, I don't think he's an idiot. I think he's just one of these guys. He makes himself available, and then he forgets that he does that to hold himself accountable, and then he sounds like he sounded yesterday, which is like a raving lunatic.
You have got to be smoking something over there this morning.
Yeah, it's weird that he suddenly makes like a huge power play because he didn't like the questions. It's just weird.
If you're going to show up, if you're going to make yourself available to these kinds of opportunities and be the man of the people, you've got to expect questions like these after the worst home loss in your tenure.
I wonder when we hear like from some owners in town, do we want more of that or do we need less of it? Right. I think we need more Tom. I think we probably could use more Danny Wirtz. I wouldn't mind that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we need more Jerry Reinsdorf.
Well, I think you want to be consistent, though, right?
I would like him to not send a letter out. I'd like him to answer questions.
Yeah, he still got to do that. He still said he would do that.
Yeah, but I
you don't want him to do that.
I don't know how I feel about it. Right. I don't know that he's at a point where he's either willing to do it or is capable of saying anything that would kind of turn my mind.
Would you welcome the gesture of showing up?
I don't know. And I don't know that
it depends on the execution.
I heard George talk in London, and that was enough of George for me, frankly.
Right. For a while?
All he said was he believes in Kevin Warren, and he said some nice things about the TV show. He didn't really get to the heart of any of the issues.
He said some nice things about the direction of the team.
Yes, he did.
And Ryan Poles, the decision he's made. You expect that.
You do.
And he did invest more confidence publicly in Kevin Warren.
We're confident in Kevin.
More so than the plan. I guess what's one and the same to him. And I think that's good to get on the record to understand where they're coming from.
Yes.
Because to him, Kevin Warren is the plan.
Yes.
So the stadium project and Kevin Warren's vision, there's no distinguishing between the two, but like we do that.
But when I thought back on that and I listened back to it, I didn't know. I initially I thought, well, what do they know that we don't know? And then after listening to it a few times, I came to the conclusion they don't really have any information.
They don't have any new information. Talk to people around.
They
don't know anything we don't know.
Exactly.
They're hoping.
Exactly.
Their hope is their plan.
And that's a
tough plan.
That's not a good
plan. But I'm glad that we heard that from him.
Okay.
So in that context, I like and welcome these owners who appear so infrequently in front of the microphones because whether, you know, they are professionals too, and they have an obligation to speak to the fans through the media. So the next time Jerry Reinsdorf does that, I want to know where he stands publicly on the 78 project, on the future of the White Sox. How far are they away? What does he think about all these calls to sell the team? You hear in his words whether he laughs off the idea of free agency or not. We have him on the record, and I think that's important for a fan base to hear.
I suppose that's
every
accurate.
So often.
I guess, and you're right, I guess my problem with it is that I'm not sure that I have much faith in what he has to say.
That's fair, too. I mean, that's earned skepticism over the years of being a fan of the White Sox, and you are entitled to that. I just think that, well, I don't need to hear from the owner every week like Jerry Jones. That's overexposure.
Yeah.
There's a happy medium,
yes,
and I think you don't want to be extremely away from the spotlight either and just issue statements. You want to be there to answer questions that are fair, and you want to establish a vision that is clear.
But don't tell me that you hired someone because you're going to be closer to winning, and that's why you didn't go outside the organization and look at anyone else. It had nothing to do with proximity to you. It was because that was going to make you closer to winning. So you leave that little kernel, and then as the guy says, well, I knew we were going to lose like 110 games, but I didn't.
I know, Mully, but I'm glad he said that rather than issue a statement and telling us that Chris Getz is a new general manager and the reasons are ambiguous.
Yes.
No, we know what he said, and we're holding him accountable for those words.
But are we?
Yeah, because we're criticizing it every time we bring it up.
Mm.
So that criticism, I think, is accountability.
I just think that there's something else going on there. Eventually they're going to leave town, and I don't think anyone's going to miss them. That's how it's going right now, and I hate to say that.
By the way, the Hawks lost last night.
That would stink. Yeah, I saw that. You know, I wish they could just come home and play a couple of games where I could see them and it wouldn't start at 9 o'clock at night.
Well, tomorrow night, they're rolling out the red carpet, literally. Home opener.
Yeah.
Yeah, at the United Center.
At least I can watch that one.
You can watch that one on Chicago Sports Network.
Good.
And it is a home game.
And I
game.
Have it. Woohoo!
Woohoo!
That's for my buddy. I'm going to start turning into a real jerk about this if you keep texting me. That's how I roll. All right, we got so much. We got so much we got to get to, and we've got the pick six next. We'll tear apart all the stories of the day. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Now go ahead and ask me whatever you want to ask me, and I'll answer whatever I feel like.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
What does it tell you about the popularity of the Bears and quarterback Caleb Williams that NFL on Tuesday shifted the Week 8 schedule to move the team's October 27th road game at Washington from noon to 3:25? Or is it much about the Commanders and their quarterback, Jaden Daniels, the second pick of the draft, right behind Caleb Williams? Should the league have moved the game to Sunday night, or are you good with the earlier late afternoon game called by Jim Nance and Tony Romo?
Well, don't move it any later. That's fine. We can handle a 3:25 start, but with our schedule, I don't want to play on Sunday night. I'm delighted that they want to move it into prime time so they can get their number one crew and have some fun with it, but not put it in place of, is it Dallas? Dallas, I think, is playing that night. There's a division game, if I'm not mistaken. So whoever, leave that one there. Yeah, I think it speaks to the popularity of the young quarterbacks. I think it's not just the Bears, but it is Caleb Williams going back to his hometown, and it is Jaden Daniels, who may be the rookie of the year. I don't know if that race is going to keep going. It was interesting to hear Caleb talk about Cliff Kingsbury and him and Jaden. He knows both of them, and they're doing their thing together. I think this is going to be a really fun storyline, a great build-up. I think in a couple of weeks we're going to all be sort of lathered up and ready to go with this matchup and use it as sort of a measuring stick of sorts for where the Bears are at and how good Caleb Williams is and how his improvement is going and what they're doing with Jaden Daniels. It's going to be fun to sink our teeth into that a little bit. So I think that it makes a ton of sense to flex the game and get more eyes on it in the late afternoon segment. And I think it is a lot about the Bears and Caleb, but it's also about the Commanders and Jaden Daniels.
I think it's equal. I think it's great news for Bears bosses and fans. I'm also super thrilled it's not Sunday night. I'll raise my hand. Sunday night football for our lifestyle, for me anyway, is the worst. And that game kicks off at like 7:25. It's the absolute
ruins the week.
It's the absolute worst Sunday night football. Anyway, what's also interesting is the Chiefs Raiders are in that window. Also, they're in the, because I was curious, okay, well, you know, the Chiefs, I mean, they play a primetime game, it seems like, every single week. And they're also in that 3:25 window, but they're not getting the number one team. And that probably has more to do about the Raiders, right? They've just traded Devontae Adams. So this is good news. This is going to be a test. Coming off the bye, the Guardians get the Panthers this week. So that should just be kind of a JV game, maybe. Or maybe not. We'll have to wait and see.
The Sunday night game that week is Cowboys 49ers. You're not bumping them. Those are two of the biggest fan bases and TV audiences you could hope for. That's a Sunday night bonanza. So you're not going to flex into that spot. And it makes sense. Moving them to the top spot on the CBS schedule makes perfect sense for a team that has started 4-2. They've got a rookie quarterback going home. Caleb Williams is a star already by NFL television standards because people want to see him grow and progress. And when you start the way the Bears have started, we've talked about it. You win that game on Sunday in London. Welcome back to NFL relevance. It's been a while in Chicago since you've been able to say that in mid-October. But here we are. And these are the kind of things that happen. And it's fun to remember what can happen when you have a season worth paying attention to and not just dreading and kind of counting down the Sundays until you get to the draft. This is NFL. This is a great NFL rivalry building between Jaden Daniels and Caleb Williams. This is maybe Burrow Mahomes. You hope it is. You hope it's something that is going to be ongoing comparisons for years to come. RG3 and Andrew Luck? Well, you wonder which one, who is who. But Jaden Daniels and the Commanders really, this is the story in Washington, D.C., is that they're talking this morning about how he has played this team into the same kind of position that Caleb Williams has steered the Bears into. So very similar situations, a great matchup. Dan Quinn and Matt Eberflus. Dan Quinn was a finalist in the same job search that resulted in Matt Eberflus being hired. And so there are a lot of different ways we can look at this one. I'm just glad we're looking at it in this the top spot on the CBS schedule.
That's one of those questions. You know how hard that is to answer.
That's the voice of Dan Weider. He'll be with the guys at 7:25 this morning. How interested should the Bears be in the Hassan Reddick sweepstakes, especially in light of the report that the Jets would also have to send a second-round pick to the Eagles if Reddick is traded to an NFC team?
Not very. I think it was a productive and very entertaining thought exercise yesterday to go through it as it was happening, as we were sort of sifting through the rubble, if you will, of what's going on in New York with the Jets, and they were contemplating Davante Adams, and we got the report that Drew Rosenhaus had permission to seek a deal, and I'm sure that he is doing that. The caveat that you need to include the Jets sending a second-round pick to the Eagles if it's a trade to the NFC also likely disqualifies the Lions, which is the team that would be in the market for a pass rusher after the injury to Aiden Hutchinson. I don't think the Bears are that desperate for a pass rusher. I don't think they feel like, and I don't look at them as being one pass rusher away from being in the Super Bowl. Maybe you could make that argument, but I don't think this is the pass rusher to do that with. That's not the trade to make. It is interesting in the light of Amari Cooper being dealt out of Cleveland, in light of Davante Adams leaving the Raiders. You wonder if the Raiders are now shopping Max Crosby. You wonder if the Browns are now shopping Myles Garrett. Now, of those conversations, ones that Ryan Pohl should be involved in as well, yes. You want to explore every possibility. Maybe there's a deal that you can strike. I don't think it's one you're going to make for Hassan Reddick, though, because of the price and because of the situation, and maybe because of the player. Not a problem in Philadelphia, but this is a guy that's had a historic holdout now. What's motivating him?
Well, it's not the Bears shouldn't be interested, but why in the world would the Jets be interested to move him anywhere with that part of the deal? I can't see the Jets trading him to an NFC team. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever to lose that kind of draft capital. You've already lost draft capital in the trade for the wide receiver yesterday. So I don't think this is happening, but sure, the Bears could be interested. No problem with that.
Yeah, I mean, Dustin, I think the problem is half the league can't really get involved in that deal. Yeah, it's a very interesting situation because you could argue that Hassan Reddick has ruined two teams. You know, the Jets would be so much better with him, and ditto Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Philly had him for a couple of years. He was a monster there. What was the year they went to the Super Bowl, he had like 16 sacks or something.
Game wrecker.
And five forced fumbles six forced fumbles. I mean, he was an unbelievable game wrecker. And you know, he's still a relatively young guy, but he's bounced around the league for a reason. He's, you know, have rush, will travel. He is, you know, a guy that wants to make money and wants to get paid, and he's in a great situation with the Jets because they gave up a lot to get him, thinking he was going to turn their fortune, and now he's like, I want money, I want to get paid, and he's working on a contract already. He got paid. He's got time left on that deal, and he wants more money, and they they thought they had reached a one-year deal with him, and he said, nah, that's not enough. And so now they're at a point where they're just trying to get something out of it. And the fact that the – I mean, very wise of the Eagles to throw in a little poison pill. Oh, by the way, if you trade – I think they gave up a third-round pick for him.
Mm-hmm.
But if you trade him to the NFC, if he goes right back into
– you got
to
pay up.
You're going to give us – you know, we already have your third. We'll take another second. I mean, that would cost them more than he did initially. It's a crazy thing to throw in. I don't think the Bears are in the market for him. I think we had fun talking about it. Would I love to see Hassan Reddick lining up for the Bears? Absolutely. And get the best players you can get and don't let anything stop you. But realistically, that's not going to happen.
His agency fired him.
Well, his agency fired him. Drew is here now.
I know, but like.
Because he was dropped by his agency.
Think about that.
They came up with a deal and they went to him. Okay, we got it.
What does
it.
That say about They're the guy in your locker away, room?
And he said no.
A locker room, the values culture is going to hire a guy dumped by his agency?
You know, I mean, listen. You know, Hassan Reddick he went to Temple, I think. And then remember, it was when John Fox was coaching the Senior Bowl. The guy shows up at the Senior Bowl and just. He went from being like just another guy that somehow got an invite to the Senior Bowl to one of the best players at the Senior Bowl. And that's kind of where he came out of nowhere, out of Temple. But that's where he made his move up the draft board.
I'll get somebody else to ask these questions, man.
The voice of Jerry Jones. What's your take on the fact the Bears already have forced 7 fumbles this season and recovered 6 of them, matching their team total from 2023 season? Did you like hearing Tremaine Edmonds say that forcing fumbles has been a big emphasis for the defense? And can you tell, given the 13 takeaways they've managed already this season?
I think it's one of the real fun stories that's out there. I think that the Bears went to work on their defense and decided that they need to get the ball, and one of the ways they need to do it is with more forced fumbles. And you see it every, you know, you see guys are punching at the ball. They're going crazy with it, and it's working. And, you know, as we talked about, the ball is oblong and it bounces funny. And the fact that they've been aggressive enough to jump on that many of them is pretty cool. 6 of 7, that's pretty good. They're doing a good job with takeaways, no doubt about it. Having 13 at this point is huge. It is a great path to victory. You win the takeaway battle, you're going to win a game. You win it lopsidedly, you're going to win big. So, you know, protecting the ball and going and getting it, that's great stuff. That's a big deal. You know, as we talked about with the peanut punch and with Lovey and kind of making that a priority, it does work. It does work when everyone's conscious about it and everybody. It adds to the mentality of sort of that that kind of game defense where you're going after everybody and you're going after the ball and we're all going to tear at it and we're going to get it out. And I think given the quality of some of their secondary players in terms of the interceptions, it's just a wonderful thing to have. And it's why the Bears are moving up the board defensively.
Absolutely. You win the takeaway battle, you win games. It's really that simple. So this has been a fascinating and fantastic thing to see them accomplish so far this year.
Definitely is a coaching emphasis, but also a roster emphasis. When you look at, you go back to the first draft, and we had all kinds of controversy over the fact they took 2 safeties without taking a wide receiver. But you draft Jaquan Brisker, and you draft Kyler Gordon, and you get guys who are blank slates and in wide open in terms of you can shape these guys in terms of a mentality, and that's what you coach. But you got to get explosive type players. You draft those 2 guys. You go out and you sign Tremaine Edmonds. You trade for Montez Sweat. You draft Javon Dexter. You add TJ Edwards. You draft Tyrique Stevenson. These are guys that are really explosive defensive players. They're not guys who are going to accept or absorb tackles. They're going to inflict them punishment, and they're going to tackle the football, and they're going to be guys who you have to have a certain type of mindset, and it requires a certain type of player. So yes, it is coaching, and you give Matt Eberflus and his staff a lot of credit for emphasizing that on a daily basis. But it all starts with the kind of guys you add to your roster. And it takes guys who are always going to be that kind of player, that kind of explosive defensive player, to make this a reality.
Go ahead. I'm trying to answer your questions, man. You want some conversation this morning? You're getting it.
More from Jerry Jones. What new AFC East wide receiver will have the bigger impact? Amari Cooper with the Bills, Devontae Adams with the Jets, and which team got better?
Well, I think in terms of media coverage, it's certainly going to be Devontae Adams all over the back pages, and I'm sure that he will continue to be monitored on our daily Jets watch, wherever you're getting your Jets news, WJETS. But I think that you could make the argument, and I would contend, the Bills got better, and Amari Cooper will have a bigger impact on the Bills and their ability to win the AFC East than Devontae Adams will on the Jets, who are unraveling in the same division. I look at Aaron Rodgers, and I see a quarterback trying to cling to something that is no longer there. He is one of, you could look at his career. He is a top 10 all-time quarterback. Conservatively, some people might put him higher. Some people may put him lower. Wherever you put him, he is an all-time great. But he is not that guy now. And so they're trying to recapture the glory they had in Green Bay for 7 or 8 years together. The chemistry will likely be there, but I just don't know if it's enough. The Jets' problems are all like a lot of teams' problems. It starts up front. They still can't protect Aaron Rodgers any better. Maybe he can get rid of the ball quicker. But I look at the Bills adding Amari Cooper to Josh Allen. He just replaced Stephon Diggs with an upgrade, maybe. Amari Cooper is a very reliable receiver. You don't hear as much from. I think he's got less diva in him, but more production.
Less diva, more production, David. That's an excellent way to put it, and that's why I agree with you that with this move, the Bills got a whole lot better. And maybe there's something to talk to Joe O about, but if we're talking about like the MVP of the NFL, like I think this increases Bills quarterback's chances. He's had a pretty good season without a whole lot of weapons. Like, they got rid of a diva and they've still been winning. They've still been winning without that diva wide receiver. And I think that's something that's interesting as well. So, yeah, I like the Bills' chances.
Yeah, I think the Bills are the better team right now. I don't know. You know, Amari Cooper, they're hoping for the kind of bump he brought to Dallas back in 2018. He really kind of raised the level of Dak Prescott. I think that, you know, you forget that the Bills are going for like their fifth straight division title or something. They have dominated that division in large part because of the quarterback. So you end up trading a receiver in the offseason. I think they thought they were going to get more out of Keon Coleman. But this is a good move for them. I think it's actually kind of a sneaky good move. He's one of, you know, he's a 4 or 5-time Pro Bowler. He's had, he's one of these kind of receivers that can go to different organizations and make a big impact. You know, someone compared him, not physically or not play style, but just the numbers wise, to Anquan Boldin. And that's a hell of a pickup if you can get a guy like that that can come in and, you know, get 1,000 yards receiving out of habit.
Good comp.
Everywhere he goes.
Sturdy, reliable receiver.
That's what I'm saying. So you're bringing a guy like that into a place where the quarterback needs some help, and that's I think, unfortunately for Devontae Adams, he's being brought in to save the season, save the quarterback.
Save New York.
It's a much bigger and more difficult thing to do. But I think, sneaky way, Amari Cooper is going to do well with the Bills.
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
Voice of Billy Donovan. He'll have a lot to say later today. Are you looking forward to seeing Lonzo Ball debut with the Bulls tonight after missing 2.5 years with that left knee injury? Ball was talked about with the difficulty of sliding his feet on defense and battling over screens. What are you expecting, and what will you be looking for?
Yeah, I think this is a very difficult position that he's being put in. I don't know what to expect. I know what I'm looking for. I want to see how he moves. I want to see if he's still an aggressive player. The idea, you know, he was a good defender. And the idea that he's struggling to slide his feet and to get to battle over screens, that would tell you that he's not no longer a good defender. So I think they keep talking about, you know, what a great IQ he has as a player, a great understanding of the game. So we're going to see a guy that is going to be outthinking people as opposed to out-athleticing them, you know, out-physicaling them. It's a difficult thing to see. I'm fascinated. I'm going to be staring at the guy's left knee the whole damn game, sadly. I just am very curious to see how he gets through it and just how much rust there is. The guy hasn't played 2.5 years. And he's got, as he said, he's got like a totally different knee. So here's hoping. But I think we're going to see like a guy who used to be like a really great player who's now kind of, you know, a shadow of what he was. And he's going to be on a minutes limit. And you're going to have to look closely.
Curious to hear what that minutes limit is going to be. I agree there will be a minutes limit. And again, the coverage here on The Score, 6:45 tonight, Chuck and Bill. We'll have it for you. So I'm going to listen. I'm going to watch. I'm in. I've given the Bulls maybe 5 minutes so far this preseason. They're getting my full attention tonight. Full attention. I look forward to the pregame. Look forward to hearing from Casey Johnson. Mm-hmm. I like Mully, get the Chicago Sports Network. Finally, my cable provider is up in front of
awesome.
Everything.
Usually,
let's go, buddy.
Usually
let's go.
I'm always,
thank you for
usually
watching,
we're always
Dustin.
In the dark.
Awesome.
And we're in the light. The stone has been rolled away. The light is shining on Mully and I for this one time on
so happy
television
for you guys.
Watching.
We're so happy.
That's awesome.
We talk about it just
you get like a special feed, don't you, David? You get like you get like a special app.
I do. As a Chicago Sports Network.
As a paid person over
I'm looking
there.
Forward to tonight. It's going to be a fun show beforehand on the Chicago lead. It's going to be a fun game. Look, it's been 1,000 days, more than 1,000 days since Lonzo Ball has been on the basketball court in a game. And so this is a emotional journey for him, the end of it. And it may be just the beginning, he hopes. It's a medical miracle or marvel. He had a meniscus transplant, okay? Think about what we're talking about here. And he's back on an NBA court. So a lot of people will be watching just for the spectacle that it will be and what it represents to him. I think when you hear things like he's difficulty sliding his feet on defense and batting over screens, it makes you think like you're watching a pickup game at the Y. A lot of guys have a hard time. Maybe that's the way he's going to play. He's going to be on the periphery. He's not going to be playing much defense. He's going to be getting the ball and finding the open man, maybe hitting the occasional three like the guy who's, you know, 40 years old, still playing at the Y, can always hit the three. I don't know what to expect. Realistically, I'm not expecting much. Maybe 10 minutes tonight. I don't know how he fits into the rotation or if he does at all this season. But let him enjoy tonight. Let him enjoy the preseason. Little hope is never a bad thing. And you give credit to him for his perseverance, the Bulls doctors for what they put him, situation they put him in to be able to have this comeback, and hope for the best. But I think that realistically, after tonight, I don't know what happens next. I think we'll just all have to stay tuned.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Nicky Lopez of the White Sox, a Gold Glove finalist at second base, but Nico Horner of the Cubs is not. With Ian Happ and Dansby Swanson recognized, does this make sense?
I don't know. I was so surprised. Nicky Lopez started 72 games at second base. Does that qualify you for a Gold Glove? 72 games. With due respect to the Naperville product and all-around good guy, and yes, he was definitely a friend of the Score, but a Gold Glove finalist? Did you watch Nicky Lopez once this year and think that's a Gold Glove second baseman? He played shortstop for 45 games. He's a second baseman for 72. And then Nicky over Nico? I didn't think that was the case. Nico's pretty darn good playing defense at second base. I get Ian Happ. He'll probably win again. I get Dansby Swanson. Slow start, but you look at the metrics and he's probably going to win again. I hope that Nicky Lopez wins, but I think it would be amusing. I don't get it. I was very surprised and a little bit amused, and I wondered, and I saw the headline, what does Mully think?
Well, we'll get to Mully in just a second. But if I'm understanding it right, not to throw a wet blanket on this question overall, there are two separate awards here. This isn't, it's a Gold Glover in the American League and a Gold Glover in the National League.
Yes, but just.
Well, okay, but I mean, that does change it. Here's what stands out to me. National League, greater than American League. That's what it says to me. If Nicky Lopez can be a finalist for a defensive position in the American League, the National League is a better league overall, top to bottom, than the American League. That's my takeaway. Okay. But this is not a Nicky Lopez versus Nico Hoerner debate. And Nico Hoerner might be in the American League next year for all we know.
Yeah, I'm not going to badmouth Nicky Lopez. He's the first player from Naperville Central to ever make the major leagues, and who am I to attack the fine people of Naperville like that? I mean, you feel free.
Did I attack the fine people
David,
of Naperville?
David has no problem doing so.
I did not do that.
For a guy like me, a Chicago born and bred guy, I just can't do it.
Last time you drove through Naperville,
I think I have to go there today. At any rate, I got a lot of love for the fine people of Naperville, and you are not going to get me to denigrate one of our beloved Sox players.
Is this a deserving designation? A Gold Glove finalist?
He's a finalist. They didn't name him a Gold Glove winner. And it's not about, and not everything is about Nico. And are they going to trade Nico? And where is Nico? And where, who the hell is
Nicky Lopez, one of the three best defensive second basemen in the American League.
That is apparently what has happened when he's played there. His defense has been so spectacular. Born and bred in Naperville. Played for Italy, I believe.
Okay, I no longer wonder what you think of this. Now I'm done.
You're not reeling me in.
I know. I'm trying to, you know.
Well, I know what you were looking for.
I tried.
All right, we got the extra point next. Smalley and Hans.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
1 year ago, the Bears 1-5 and reeling. A year later, they're embracing the hopes and expectations of a revived football city. What's the biggest reason why, and what's changed the most?
It's somewhat remarkable to think back to that a year ago when Justin Fields had gotten injured. It was time to open the Bagency and all kinds of things were swirling around the Bears coaching staff, the direction of the franchise, and how long it would be before Matt Eberflus was fired. We were having these kind of conversations just a year ago, and now it seems like that was a long time ago. What's changed? Well, Matt Eberflus has leaned into his personality a little bit more. He took over defensive play calling duties and frankly saved his job. He, as a head coach, he's a very good defensive coordinator who's becoming a better head coach. He's making things seem more comfortable. He's more at ease. He worked on his communication skills in the offseason, which improved his ability as a leader. And I think that all falls under the category of leadership, and he has become a better leader. So that's where I think it began. But let's face it, where it continued and where it has now ascended, they changed the complexion of the franchise and the future of the operation when they drafted Caleb Williams. He walks in the building. He is immediately in charge. He has an easy confidence. We had questions about how he would adapt and adjust. It looks like he's going to be just fine. There will be obstacles to overcome. Nobody's celebrating anything yet, but there is a vibe. There is a hopefulness. There is optimism, and it is a different mentality at Halas Hall and a different feeling in the city. 1 year later, things are looking up and headed in the right direction for the Bears.
Ryan Poles has gotten better at his job. David, I think you're right. Matt Eberflus has gotten better at his job. The players they have brought in have bought into the culture that they're setting at Halas Hall. They've bought into it. And I think that also is a big tip of the cap to both of the guys that we're talking about in Poles and in Eberflus. And the other thing is, yeah, they have the quarterback. And I'm not going to sit here and say that they have the wrong quarterback, but I will bring this up. And I think Pittsburgh's kind of going through the same thing. I would argue that the Bears could have the same record right now with Justin Fields. They might even be one game better with Justin Fields, who likes to run a little bit more. I don't know that they would have scored 30 points in back-to-back games as they have with Caleb Williams. But moving forward, Caleb Williams is the better answer to the question, which is who should be QB1 for
I like that argument. I think it's interesting.
I think that the greatest difference, there's a lot of differences, but the talent level is so much better on their team. You know, Montez Sweat wasn't here at that point a year ago. He hadn't
Good
even
point.
They hadn't even made that trade yet. And by the way, Montez Sweat, who will be playing against the Washington Commanders for the first time since that trade.
He's going home too.
He's also going home, so that's a big one. You know, we know about getting Caleb and Roma Dunze, and we understand that Keenan Allen has come in, and all the upgrade in the talent. The Bears currently are 12th in the NFL with 24.7 points per game, so they are scoring in the top half of the league. They're 12th. And 12th with a bullet. Maybe they can start putting points together. That's what we were hoping for. Meanwhile, they're fifth in the league in points allowed at 16.8 per game. Defense is the whole goal for years and years. If you could hold a team to 17 points, they're doing it. Now, can they do it when they play the more explosive offenses and all? We're going to find all that out. But this is a team that's on a three-game winning streak, and their numbers are starting to look significantly better as well. You feel like they're a team on the rise, a team on the come, and you feel like they're just going to get better as the year goes on. Will that happen? Remains to be seen. But I think that there's a lot of really good things happening right now and a lot of reasons for it. The maybe the largest one is the talent level improving significantly.
It's a great point. Good drafts, smart drafts, a couple good personnel moves. The Montez Sweat deal was huge. When you talk about big differences from a year ago at this time, that's got to be near the top of the list.
Yeah.
Caleb Williams and Montez Sweat both joining the organization. Each guy has made his own impact quickly, but both guys can make the argument that they really changed the course of everything.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Good memory.
It's a really fun difference from one year to the next.
It's just beyond belief in terms of this conversation, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
The Bears had an off when they had a bye week last year. It was like, oh my gosh, do we have to talk about the Bears during the off week?
You know, I got to tell you, it's great to have a conversation about the Bears where it doesn't start with firing a coach, where you're on a three game winning streak. Had they lost one of those games, and you're sitting here and you're like, yeah, you know, they can barely keep their head over. There's just a different vibe now at 4-2 than there would be at 3-3.
It's great to talk about which of the four teams in the NFC North is not going to be in the playoff hunt.
Exactly.
Rather than which of the four available head coaches will be the guy that you want to bring into Hallis Hall.
It's such a great point. All right, we've got your calls next, 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Money, 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 money.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, the Score. Always a delight to talk to our friend Joe Ostrowski from BetQL. He joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Joseph, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, fellas. If you bet favorites over the weekend in the NFL, you are feeling good. It finally happened. We saw that turn. Favorites go 10-3-1 against the spread. A lot of people, when they see a home dog, they love to bet on them. Home dogs 0-9 against the spread over the weekend. Yeah, so if you bet favorites, you're feeling good. You take the underdogs, not so much.
Joe,
yeah.
Let's pay off the tease. We talked at the pick six about Josh Allen and the effects on his MVP chances now that he has Amari Cooper. Last week, we're talking about Josh Allen recovering from 9 of 30. This week, we're talking about him in the MVP race. What do you think?
Totally agree with your points on Amari Cooper and the impact that he can make. We went into the season thinking, boy, how's Josh Allen going to have to do this? He's going to have to wear the Superman cape. And now they have a legit number one. They were kind of depending on Keon Coleman as a rookie to be that guy. Now they're going to have Amari Cooper. So it makes sense what you're saying. Josh Allen is the third favorite for the MVP race, plus 650. I want to say that was fourth before this trade. Now Mahomes is the favorite. Because his name's Patrick Mahomes. If you're looking at the actual stats from this year, I don't think anybody would make him the favorite, but he's Mahomes and his team is awesome. So he's your favorite at 3-1. Lamar is now the second favorite. That is a big jump from where we were at the start of the season. I thought it was just, look, they don't really want to give a third MVP to Lamar because of the rare air. So the idea that Josh Allen could be in the mix here, I think that's strong. It's felt for a while like it's only going to be a matter of time before he actually wins that award. But guys, if you're not paying attention to the NFL and you take a look at these odds after 6 weeks, you're like, what is happening? You've got a rookie as the fifth favorite in Jaden Daniels. You've got Sam Darnold as the seventh favorite in the league. Like, that's kind of the competition for Josh Allen right now.
Well, I'm curious. We have never seen at this time of year a division with four teams with winning records. There are four victory teams across the NFC North. What are the odds looking like, Joe?
So what? There's a bet out there, and it sounds insane, and it probably is. History tells us it is. But you can bet on all four NFC North teams to make the playoffs at 12-1. Just because of how it's played out so far this season. The NFC North is awesome. We know that. And now it's getting around everywhere. They're like, oh, wait, this division's really, really good. It's not the AFC North. It's the NFC North that's the best. The NFC North is 18-4 against the spread this season for 82%. That is the best win percentage against the spread through 6 weeks that we've seen in the wild card era. That's how dominant the division has been so far. But believe it or not, the odds tell us the Bears have a worse chance to make the playoffs than they did at the start of the season because everybody's good.
That's odd.
That's very strange.
That's because Minnesota's
going to have to jump everybody.
Yeah. Vikings, big surprise.
Yeah, the Vikings were the long shot. The Bears would have to jump one of those teams.
Joe, no Bears game this weekend. What is your best bet in light of that?
Well, the Vikings-Lions game is going to be really intriguing to everyone. The Vikings are favored by 2.5, and this Hutchinson injury, I mean, he was the defensive player of the year favorite. Close eye on that. Want to see if Hockenson's going to be returning. Aaron Jones could be returning for Minnesota. But so if they go to Russ, yeah, I'm going to have to bet on Aaron Rodgers and company. Jets -1.5 at the Steelers. It looks like the Steelers will be down to a third string center. The timing of this change doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but for 1 week, a happy Aaron Rodgers could be good things for the Jets in desperation mode for a win.
Wow.
So they're going to bench Fields, start Russ, and lose to
That would be something else.
I guess.
What?
Yeah.
Any college picks, Joe?
Well, I mean, everybody's going to pay close attention to the Georgia-Texas game we've got this weekend. Texas is favored by 3.5 to 4 points. The thing with Texas is, like, you can't really argue against anything. The one thing that you could say is, well, who have they played? You know, Michigan's not as good as we thought they were going to be before the season started. Same thing with Oklahoma. They just trounced them over the weekend. And then it's, you know, been Colorado State, UTSA. So there's some question there. And Georgia, they go down big to Bama early, but then they fight back. Since it's more than a field goal, I'll say Georgia. Maybe we can get this number at 4 at some spots, but yeah.
Great
Georgia.
Stuff, Joe. Thank you, buddy. Great catching up.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, fellas. Bye.
That is Joe Ostrowski. You're listening to Mully and Haw. We're going to get to your calls. 312-644-6767. It's Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.